President Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening. This is Evident Footprints, the Christmas version. I want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas, those of you that celebrate Christmas. And I'm going to stay away from terms that imply what people like to call politically correct, because I see nothing in politics these days that's correct, so there's no point in being politically correct, because we would be the aberration, especially those of us who are not politicians. Anyway, I thought tonight would be an interesting time to talk about the birth of Christ and how December 25th has become a rather commercial holiday and really has nothing to do with the birth of Christ. Speaking of the calendar and the actual birth date, we know that Christ was not born on December 25th. And to pretend that he was is really disingenuous to God's Son and the price he paid for our salvation. Now, some people have a problem with the concept of salvation. It would, in essence, be the end result of karma. Those of you who are of a more Eastern philosophy, karma being the debt that you incur through the deeds that you do throughout your lifetime, and or a multiplicity of lifetimes, and depending on whether you're a murderer or a thief or a rapist or maybe someone who owned slaves and mistreated them, or someone who was a habitual liar, someone who did not operate in integrity, maybe was fraudulent in the manner in which you conducted your day-to-day business. There are a host of reasons why someone would incur karma, and they're not all related to business, of course, or murder. How you treat animals, how you treat the earth in respect to universal concepts, in respect to violating universal law, these are things that we know on some deeper level, and the fact that we sometimes just disregard what we know and go on ahead anyway and carry on with our plans has a lot to do with the karmic debts that we incur, primarily because we are so unconscious about the impact of what we do on a day-to-day basis and throughout a lifetime, that if we can't remember who we are and why we came here, and possibly some recollection of our past in other bodies, if you want to call it that, or in other forms of existence, then we have quite a bit to rehash to regain our consciousness. We're born into these bodies as infants on planet Earth, and we're probably more conscious at the moment when we take our first breath than we are when we take our last dying breath. And it's somewhat of a dichotomy in that we're born knowing quite a bit and we die having forgotten most of it. Now, that's not true in all cases. In fact, those of us who are awakening spiritually right now are going to be more conscious about the rest of our lives and possibly even learn a little bit about where we're headed. So there's something to look forward to in the coming times. Now, going back to the life of Christ, if we look at organized religion and all of the anomalies, the differences between how each, let's say, a congregation within a Baptist church or a congregation within a Protestant church, or the way the new, what's called the First Assemblies of God, or the Christian Scientist Church, on and on and on. We have all these different denominations of churches, different denominations of Christianity, all professing to be the one and the only type of Christianity. And yet, there are so many different interpretations of who Christ was, what his purpose was for coming here, and our relationship to that. And I think to err in his birth date or to make a pagan holiday around his so-called birth date is really disingenuous to who Christ was and is and his purpose for coming here in the first place. Let's assume for a moment that there is life on other planets. Now, that's a lofty concept for some people because they don't have much of a life on this planet, let alone contemplate life somewhere else. But let's say in our solar system that there's life on Venus, or there's life on Mars, life on Saturn, some kind of life. And or Mercury or Uranus or Pluto, which I understand is no longer a planet because it doesn't meet certain criteria. I think our ignorance of the universe seems to be growing day by day, or the intention to make us become ignorant is increasing, with the amount of mind control that's going on and the spin on ancient history. But imagine that there's life on another planet, just in our solar system. Forget about outside of this solar system or other parts of our galaxy. And imagine that Christ had been there at one time, or is possibly there now, fulfilling the same role that he fulfilled when he came to the earth. How would Christ look upon where we have progressed in the 2,000 plus years since his crucifixion and his ascension? How would he consider us to be in terms of our spiritual consciousness? Have we awakened, or have we learned anything from his message? Have we learned anything from the message in the New Testament and the Book of Revelation? And in terms of who Christ is, did he just come to earth and then just disappear? Stop and think for that about that for a moment. It hardly seems even plausible that the earth is the only place in the universe where there is life. In fact, if Christ is living still, and if Christ is to return to the earth, then he has to be somewhere living right now. So there is a place somewhere in the universe where there is life, or Christ wouldn't be living. There is obviously life elsewhere in the universe, and there is a preponderance of evidence to state that is fact. And that life not only exists in those other places, but it has come here to our planet to visit. Who are we to assume that this is the only planet Christ would have come to, the only race of people called human beings that Christ would have come to impart a profound message? Not just a message of salvation, but a sort of a roadmap for how to be a conscious being, how to be someone loving and caring, how to be prosperous and experience abundance, how to heal, how to rise above the limitations that we are fed in order for a small clique of people to control us for the purpose of taking our money and our land and our possessions. We know who operates in that realm, and whether you believe in God or not, or Christ or not, you can certainly look at what's going on in the world and see that there is evil going on, and that has a source. And those that choose to follow that path are aligning themselves with that form of energy. And really all it is a dichotomy of what the rest of us know or I'll use the word believe here. Let's say have faith in as something that exists. And I'm speaking about peace and love and joy and the goodness of the universe in its relationship to our Creator. Our Creator would have to be pretty sadistic to create everything of an evil nature, and yet in His offering us an experience in a body with a mind and giving us a soul, giving us a personality really that's inhabiting the body and has the body and the mind to express itself in a physical reality, it would be rather difficult to accept the premise that the Creator was so sadistic that He would allow us to be totally controlled by the dark side or the evil forces of the universe throughout our existence. And then tell us things like we were created out of love, or that the ultimate reality is peace and joy and eternity in heaven, because our eternity down here has not been that pleasant, at least what I've experienced of it. Now, that doesn't mean I haven't had pleasant moments in my life or that you haven't had pleasant moments in your life, but what you have experienced throughout your life is an aberration from the highest good, the highest order of things in a universal sense, in the sense of the original creation. The story in the Bible about the fall of man is directly related to his succumbing to the fallen angels. Lucifer being the chief musician in heaven and assuming that he could become God, having made the choice and stating his intention to be God, he took down with him a number of followers who were also of the angelic realm. And they began wreaking havoc upon the universe. This is evident by the species that come from other planets. Not all other planets, but some other planets. Anyone who has studied ufology has heard about the realm near the star system the Zeta Reticuli. And we hear about the Dracos or the Draconians, we hear about the Reptilians, we hear about the Greys, which my understanding is that there are both biological grays, and there are hybrid grays. There are tall grays, there are short grays. Some of the grays are act independently as we humans act, at least as far as our controllers allow us to act. Then you have the reptilians, who are also known as shapeshifters. They can mimic DNA of a human and so on, take on the appearance of a human. And the Draco, which are the winged reptilians, and some of these beings from other realms have had descriptions put into our artwork, into our archaeological artifacts. In Egypt, for example, or certain parts of South and Central America, pretty much around the world, actually, depending on who you talk to and who hides history from us and who hides the recent discoveries, we know that there is a certain accuracy to some of these descriptions. On my website, directlightproductions.com, if you go to that website and click on news, you get a news page that lists all the articles that I have posted under news. And I have a very interesting JPEG or picture, photograph, on that page that shows a horned skull. And it looks sort of human in a sense. It definitely belonged to something that had a head and looks like it may have walked upright, because it's very similar to the skull of a man. Only it has much larger eye sockets. It has what may have been a similar nose to what we have. What's interesting are that there are two horns on this skull, and there is a lot of rough area, surface area, around the rest of the skull. Much like pictures that we've seen, and the descriptions of people who have, that come from people who have seen reptilians. These reptilians, or the Draco, or the Greys that are often seen with them, seem to have an agenda in mind, and seem to have been here on the earth for a long time, and in other realms. They're not known just here on the earth, but on other planets in our solar system. And I would presume other planets outside our solar system, still within our galaxy. Now, these beings seem to have a dark side to them. They seem to be controlling. They seem to have an agenda. They seem to be rather disingenuous with the government people that they've been in contact with. Of course, the government never likes to admit that they've been in contact with these people, yet everyone who's ever written about it has committed suicide. Somehow I think writing causes you to commit suicide, especially when you're writing about the truth. Of course, I'm being sarcastic in that. Or you have a plane crash or a car accident or a heart attack. And the usual method of committing suicide is shooting yourself multiple times in the back of the head with the opposite hand that you use. For instance, if you're right-handed, you shoot yourself with the left hand, and vice versa. To stop the truth from coming out is to disregard not just the teachings of Christ, but any prophet that walked the earth that spoke about achieving a higher consciousness through communication with the Creator. In many cases, that individual, be it Abraham or Moses or Isaiah or Daniel, there are many prophets in the Bible who spoke about Christ's coming and spoke about events that were to occur on the earth, events that are actually occurring right now. So there's an aspect of prophecy that is profoundly accurate if one is in tune, if one is connected, if one has tapped into the source of all of this knowledge. So we see something with our eyes, we hear things with our ears, and we certainly have thoughts about those things. Now, are they our thoughts, or are they thoughts being given to us? Because if we consider how thoughts are things, and they kind of float around in the ether, are we grabbing someone else's thought? Are we being, is our thought or our perception of thought being directed by some information that's being beamed at us? Or is it totally based upon our creativity and our tapping into the source of the creativity? That is an issue that can be talked about in numerous shows, but let it suffice to say that what Christ came here to teach mankind, and whether or not he was born on December 25th is really not the issue, but it was the meaning for why he came here. And I tend to deduce that he came here more to instruct us on how to escape our karma, or how, and I don't mean escape it in the sense of running away from it. I mean, how to avoid having to pay karma, not incurring these debts, to really prevent us from moving forward or moving higher. Everything Christ talked about was the easiest way, and it was sort of the middle road all the time. I once described to an audience in a radio show how I had walked across a bridge. And this was when I was in Europe. I was out in the country in Switzerland, and I was on one of these walking trails that's out in the woods. You can run this or you can walk it, and it's several miles through the mountains and the forest. And occasionally you would come across a stream, and there was a wooden bridge constructed to get you over that stream. And I walked halfway across the bridge, and I stopped, and I looked at the water, and it was higher than usual, because there had been quite a bit of snowfall, and the snow was melting, and this water was rushing in a torrent. And I noticed some debris on the sides of the stream on both banks, and rather large logs, tree limbs and branches, and some large logs, and they were lodged in the sides of the bank, and just some normal vegetation that was along the side there kind of snagged it, just like a net would trap a big fish. And right in the middle where I looked, I saw this lone little leaf just meandering down the stream, and these huge logs were having a great amount of difficulty even moving. They were stopped for all intents and purposes. The water was really rushing rapidly, and this little leaf was just making its way through right through the middle of the stream. And I saw that as a sort of a sign, and I really contemplated what I was seeing there, because the smallest, weakest thing there was making the most progress. It was the least imposing of all of the things that I saw in the water, and yet it made the most progress. And I think Christ's teaching, and really the teaching of many, many prophets, many saints, and many seers throughout history have been in line with that, that the meek shall rise to become the greatest, and the powerful shall be brought down to their knees and have a price to pay. So how you treat people in this lifetime and how you control them and the things that you do to them that usurp or infringe upon their sovereignty, their freedom of choice, and their freedom of determining for themselves what their destiny is going to be, is a violation of universal law, whether it's in the Bible or in some other sacred book. I would think anything truly sacred would be honoring universal law. It would be honoring the Creator, would be honoring the creation, nature, animals, the earth, or whatever locale that life was being experienced in. And if not, then there would be a karmic debt. Karma is basically a debt, but it's a debt that transcends the physical and often involves the physical as it's paid, or the mental, or just the spiritual, or any combination of the three. I think those of us that have gone through this life and have really not focused on the physical side understand what that means. Now, some of us have struggled with the physical side. We have struggled because we have been taught to believe that there is an insufficiency. So we have learned to accept illusions as reality. There's not enough to go around. So therefore, I have to grab as much as I can. And a million is not enough, so I have to try to grab 100 million or a billion or 100 billion. And when 100 billion is not enough, I've got to get my sights on a trillion. There are people on the planet currently that have their minds on that, and that's all. And at any cost, they will pursue that goal. Never realizing that when they leave, when their time is up and they move on, they can't take a penny of it with them. Can't take a penny of it with them. And in fact, they will have to then begin to face the consequences of what they did to get that money, who they stepped on, who they murdered, stole the money from, what other evil things did they do once they got the money. Christ talked about money, talked about the reality of the money. He talked about those that gave their last penny, knowing somehow some part of them knew that they would be rewarded. Now, we don't give to charity for the purpose of being rewarded, but if you abide by universal laws, your giving will be met by receiving. And the spirit through which you give, you shall receive sometimes hundredfold, sometimes thousandfold. The meaning of the Christmas holiday, if it is about giving, we should first look at the fact that Christ gave his life. And how many of us are willing to give our lives for the cause of saving mankind? Because that's what we're really facing today. With the madness and the chaos going on in the world, not to mention the corruption, and the corruption is not just in organized crime. It's not exclusive to organized crime. Organized crime has become politics and government. And what we always thought was leadership really was license to steal, license to rule and to crush opposition, to crush those that would see themselves as as free or supportive of some ideal, some concept that was always taken advantage of, and it is still to this date. I look at the power structure of the organized church. This very evening, I watched, intentionally looking for some celebration of the Mass. I found the version that's piped into the major networks from the Vatican. And I saw the hypocrisy. And I'm not attacking the people of the Catholic faith, but I'm certainly going to talk for a moment about what I see in the Vatican. The symbology, the upside-down crosses, and the hypocrisy in the very leadership, the Pope, whose name prior to becoming Pope Benedict was Ratzinger, and he used to sell chemicals for IG Farben and was responsible for the Klystron B gas that IG Farben made to gas the people at the concentration camps. This is the man that's the Pope now. Very few Catholics are aware of that history. In fact, the name Ratzinger is a Jewish name. And so we have a Jewish pope in the Vatican, which is supposed to be a Roman Catholic institution. And it amazes me how many people of the Catholic faith that worship the Pope do not even know his background. This is how evil the evil is. Oh, he's the Pope. You can't say that about him. I'm just stating history. Is it in the history books, per se? The ones that they would give us in school? No, but those of us who have researched the topic know quite well who Mr. Ratzinger was. Very few people know about the pedophilia and the sexual or the very sadistic sacrifices, human sacrifices, the sacrificing of children, for example, that go on at the Vatican. These are the people that are proclaiming to follow the teachings of Christ. These were Christ's enemies when Christ was alive. Of course, he also had enemies amongst the rabbis in Jerusalem. He was the enemy of the two paradigms. The reason why is because he was the Son of God, and he had no agenda to push, no one to control, other than to fulfill his mission that he came to fulfill, and he did it. And he did it without complaining, and it was a difficult one. I don't know anyone that would find any amount of pleasure or solitude in or satisfaction in hanging from a cross and being suffocated while your hands and your feet were nailed to where you couldn't move them. And it is said that every disease came upon him also before he left. I wonder how those diseases compared to what we have today, the ones that have been manufactured, the ones that have morphed from some other type of disease. I wonder. Now, we turn Christ's birth into an event, a festive event, and it's worth honoring, but it's become cheap to where people line up for 8 hours or 12 hours or 24 hours in front of a consumer electronics store to buy the latest Nintendo or the latest PlayStation or whatever contraption has come out. These people stand in line to buy that for hours and hours and hours and hours. And they could be praying, they could be doing something to develop their consciousness, but they're just further putting their head in the sand and submitting to further mind control and not realizing it whatsoever. And really, they could care less. To tell them that not only are they not experiencing a full life, but that their spiritual evolution has become totally stagnant or is going in reverse. That's always a possibility. I don't think you can do what some people do to pollute their minds and their bodies and expect not to go in reverse on a spiritual level. The more unconscious you become, the more you have to do to reacquire or remember that consciousness. And the soul must be crying on in its own plane. It must be very, very unhappy that it has been reduced to an observer of someone playing video games. And video games where murder now is a topic, terrorism is a topic. I remember a few years ago there was a controversial video game out called Grand Theft Auto, and this was supposed to be entertainment, and we wonder why we have the insurance rates we have and why we have so much crime and so much disrespect for life. And it's not just because of this video game. We're back to having alcohol commercials on television again, where they were outlawed at one time. That was considered to be something that was contributing to the decadence of society. Now there's no problem about contributing to the decadence of society. So while we're celebrating Christ's life, we have decadent commercials nonstop on television for those that put themselves in front of the boob tube all day long and all night. And there aren't these real reminders about Christ, but we have these feel-good stories. It's a Wonderful Life. It's a great story about how a corrupt banker is able to accidentally come upon the deposits of his competitor bank. And here, what we don't realize is we're rooting for one banker over the other banker, and they're all dealing in the fractional fiat currency that rules the planet. And in the end of the movie, after George, who is the individual working for the bank, managing the bank, after he sees what life would be like without him, then he comes back, he decides he wants to live, he wants to face the problem, and the whole community gives him money to make up for the money that was lost. I think it was Lionel Barrymore who was the antagonist in the movie, and he was the Scrooge of his time, in other words. He preferred to see this man and his family and the rest of the community suffer for the losses of that $8,000 deposit, I believe it was. The focus in It's a Wonderful Life becomes the physical reality and the money. Now, you're supposed to have a warm, fuzzy feeling at the end of the movie, because everyone is giving, 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 giving. But what are they giving? They're giving money. Now, is it really out of love that they're giving that, or is it out of guilt? It's the whole storyline of the movie is pretty loaded that if you really studied it, you'd probably see it was just intended to condition us to the banking system. That's what it is today. The difference is that there are millions of people around the country right now who don't have a wonderful life. They don't have these to their house dumping buckets of money on the table and on the floor and giving all their precious keepsakes because they have some financial value. And the reality is that's not how life is. So how are we to extricate ourselves from this, or how are we to create a new reality? Well, we could use the examples that Christ gave us. We talked about loving each other, something that we have a hard time doing. I'm at fault. I can tell you that I'm supposed to love my enemies, and I have a hard time loving some of them. I can love them, but I certainly can hate what they do. When they do it accidentally, when they do it out of ignorance, it's one thing. But when they plan what they do, and they do it repeatedly, as if to say, look how stupid you are, look how ignorant you are, we're doing this, and you don't even choose to stop it. You don't even care. So the whole system that we have today really prevents us from confronting our reality and moving to a higher place. If Christ came here to clearly point out how we were being controlled, even in the days 2,000 years ago, there's not much difference between what's going on now and then. Technologically speaking, it's even the same. Oh, we have laser weapons and tanks and all kinds of bombs and telecommunications, satellites, electromagnetic propulsion, antimatter. We have all of this, but in terms of what life was like back then, for them to have swords and spears and arrows and axes was just as advanced. What have we learned, though? We've, as a society or as a mass of people, just going through the cycle of regeneration, generation after generation, what have we learned? We've learned to make the same mistakes that our parents made and their parents and their parents, on and on. So we haven't really learned the lesson that Christ taught us, but to celebrate his birthday on the day that is not even his birthday somehow seems disingenuous and loses the focus and the meaning for which he came here. Also, man errs in assuming that Christ came here to be our savior or to be our salvation. From what? From ourselves? Or from the dark forces at work? Or both? I think the concept of him being our salvation may not be totally true in that sense. In one way, yes, but not necessarily completely, because we have to take responsibility for our choices. See, we make the mistake in assuming that we're not responsible for anything. And I've heard preachers in person or on television or on the radio or on some recorded media make the statement that Christ paid the price for us already. So if you sin, all you have to do is say, I'm sorry, and the price is paid. That's really the kindergarten version of Christianity, if it's not even preschool. And it's teaching people how to keep relying on that promise, even though all the evidence shows that it's a totally ridiculous claim. All that is said just to keep the people on your side, to keep the donations coming in, and empower these people to have these outrageously opulent lifestyles. Some of them own jets. They own mansions in various cities across the country, taking every penny. I've seen some of them in person brag about taking an old lady's last $5, bragging that they had that much power that they could take the last $5 from an old lady. What courageous leaders they are. What spiritual warriors they are. And they do this, leaving these people to trust that God is just going to bless them 1,000 times. And then they'll be in line to take that 1,000 times the $5 when the lady has it, if she ever gets it. But they'd be just as satisfied to keep her $5 and never see her prosper again. Because they can reaffirm the statement that I heard this preacher say. See how much power I have. I took her last $5. And I look at it as shameless deceit and theft. And definitely that individual is a false prophet because he's not practicing what he preaches. Then they get caught with pornography, or they get caught with the local hooker or the local church secretary, and they always have an excuse. Many of them drink. Many of them are on drugs. All of them together. They start these huge projects, raising millions of dollars, and this money goes into their own pockets. And then they do a couple of years of some really large jail sentences. They should be in jail for life. If you're going to put somebody in prison for committing the crimes they commit, they should be in there for their whole life because they've ruined everyone else's lives. But the system rewards them and gets them back out there again because they have the ability to raise money. They are approachable now. They have been compromised, and now they can say, okay, you go about making your money, but this is how much you give us. And so now our Christianity has been totally bastardized by them and by the government. And you have the people, oh, so-and-so is saved. They're back. You know, they repented of their sins and they're back, never realizing that they're just going to keep taking their money. The government is going to keep taking it via the back door. And somehow these people now keep their noses clean because they're paying up. And they were probably told, miss a payment, you're going right back to jail. So they will make sure that you give. One of these pastors passed away a couple of months ago, or within the last year, we'll say. And he had invented the Jerusalem rocks, which were basically rocks that they had strewn out over the muddy pathways and driveways to their newest construction site near his university. Some of you may know who I'm talking about, but the fact that they took rocks from the driveway, put them in plastic bags, and sold them to people on their television show as Jerusalem rocks. Jesus had walked on these rocks, according to this minister. And these things they do in the name of Christ. So as you can see, it's very easy to corrupt these people. In fact, most of them are corrupt when they start out. And to compete with their competitor, the Vatican, they now band together in TV shows and in tent meetings. And you'll see 20 or 30 of these pastors all together singing songs and taking turns preaching for 5 minutes. And if you really pay attention to what they're saying, they're not even saying anything. There's no substance to what they're promoting. And it doesn't change on Christmas. It doesn't change when they're celebrating a date other than Christ's actual birthday. Well, we don't know when Christ's birthday was. That was over 2,000 years ago. Why is it so difficult to know that? Because of the disinformation? My goodness, it was the Son of God. Certainly someone would have recorded that date. How would you feel personally if we celebrated your birthday? Let's say your birthday was January 1st. How would you feel if we celebrated your birthday on July 30th and your birthday was January 1st? You wouldn't be very happy about it. You would want to be acknowledged on the day of your birthday. How important is that to celebrate your birthday? Well, if you're going to celebrate it on the right day, or on the correct day. Somehow, what's interesting is that regardless of what year it is, Christ's birthday is always on December 25th. Yet Easter Sunday, which is the holiday that celebrates his demise on a cross, his crucifixion, his suffocation, and the scourging of every disease, somehow that's convenient to change that date to whenever. But Christmas has to be December 25th. Because of its commercial importance. What do they celebrate with on Easter? Flowers and candy. What do we celebrate Christ's birthday with? Presents, toys, video games, clothes. If you watch TV commercials, cars and diamonds. What do those things have to do with the birth of Christ? So they've commercialized the day, and they've really made it a pagan holiday all the way around. And even though it's become a pagan holiday and really big business will not use the term Merry Christmas. They'll say Happy Holidays. I asked a cashier that question earlier in the week when I was buying some hardware supplies. Cashier said, Happy Holidays to me. And I said, I'm not leaving here until you say Merry Christmas. If you're going to acknowledge a holiday, then and a pagan holiday, be more specific. Happy Holidays could mean birthday, could mean President's Day, it could mean Memorial Day, Labor Day, Martin Luther King's birthday. Those are all holidays. Say what you mean. Merry Christmas. Her response was, well, we have to be politically correct. As I said earlier, there is no such thing as politically correct because the politicians have not gotten it right yet. When they do, there will be peace on this earth, and there will be equality among men, meaning that men will be given equal opportunities to achieve the same things. And people will be free to live their lives as they choose instead of how it's ordained by a handful of people that may have links to the reptilian skull on my news page. With that, we're out of time tonight. I want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas. I won't wish you a Happy New Year yet because I've got another week of shows yet till that time comes. I want to thank Donald Newsom for staying up late to facilitate this show, and I hope someone heard this message. Peace, light, and love. And I'll see you tomorrow night. Merry Christmas.